time I bring up my favorite movie or song, y'all call my shit corny. You act like I don't have no taste and no flavor. I'm a Luddite or some bullshit like that. What kind of particular shit is that? It's the shit I like. That's what I like. That's my type of shit. You know? Why don't you know y'all just say something nice?
It's showtime.
Welcome to the Say Something Nice podcast. Film, TV, and music news and discussions from a multicultural point of view, plus reviews of the movies, music, and TV shows that we enjoyed, or otherwise, this past week. Plus, our Say Something Nice Challenge, where we challenge each other to say something nice about the best and worst in pop culture. You can find our show at ssmpodcast.com and also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever else podcasts can be found, under Say Something Nice Podcast and under the Say Something Nice Podcast Network. You can also find us on all social media under the handle at SSM Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome. My name is Brandon.
This is Ken.
This is Ollie.
And this is the Say Something Nice Podcast. We got the order. Yay. Come on, order. we're recording this on Sunday, February the 25th, 2018. Are we still high off of Black Panther fever?
Yes. I still need to say it another time. I'm mad I haven't seen it two times yet.
I want to go see that the real IMAX.
What did you just say?
I want to go see that the real IMAX. Not the IMAX, the real IMAX.
Mall of Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
Is that far away?
It's by my job.
You have fun with it.
So yeah, it's far away. But I really do want to see it in IMAX. Wakanda forever. I've always been debating whether or not I should start one of these episodes trying to do a Wakandan accent, but I don't know if I'm not brave enough to yet to try.
That'd be offensive. Nope. Don't do it.
You could probably do it easier than I could.
I could, but I'm also not from Africa.
You know, you're from real Wakanda. You're from a magical...
It can't be Wakanda in Themyscira.
Themyscira. It could be both. It could be DC. It could be Barf.
Wakanda Skura.
Wakanda Skura. That's what you have to say. That might be the show title. Oh... Themyscira and Wakanda. Unfortunately, the two movies that Ken saw this week don't have shit to do with darkness, but he's going to tell us about them anyways.
Oh, yes, they do. All right. So the first film I had pleasure of watching was Annihilation, which is, who directed it? Basically, it stars Natalie Portman, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, and who else? I'm sorry. I should be more prepared. I thought I was really going for the director's name. Alex Garland, who you might know from 28 Days Later, Ex Machina, and a few other films. This was not a highlight for him. Most of my issues with Annihilation is... it's kind of like this idea that this something from outer space has landed and is kind of changing the area, and it's growing, and before it takes over the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some kind of way, in this kind of haphazard way, they don't really explain, four women end up going to kind of try to figure out what's going on and how they can stop it. One of them is Natalie Portman, who was going in for personal reasons. Problem with the film is that it has an interesting premise, but kind of wastes it. The ending, it will leave you upset and angry. It's just poor writing. It felt like he had an idea that wasn't long enough for a full movie. So it doesn't quite work. It's more like a Twilight Zone episode or something like that. It was a waste of talent. He doesn't really develop the characters too well. And it's a disappointment in comparison to those two other films of his that I've liked. And it's already going to go to Netflix in March. It's going to Netflix in other countries. I'm not sure about the US.
So that is a new thing that Hollywood's doing. So they're doing an Annihilation where they're waiting 2 weeks because, you know, bootleggers. And they're, instead, as opposed to selling the movie overseas where they probably don't feel like it'll sell, they're going to just put it on Netflix. They're doing also that for Son of Shaft, which we don't have in our docket, but, you know, Jesse T. Usher, Samuel L. Jackson, Richard Roundtree, you know, they shot a Shaft remake that shot here in Atlanta. It's going to be only in America, I believe Canada, 2 weeks. Then it's going to be on Netflix everywhere else in the rest of the world.
Yeah. But an issue is the film has so much potential and it's squandered by futile, like, it's just like these ideas that kind of go nowhere. These ideas, these concepts. And it just wasn't a good time. And it was in the word, I mean, it was just long and slow. So, I don't really recommend it. I mean, it'll be on Netflix soon. And that's where it belongs. I also got the pleasure of seeing the Jennifer Lawrence movie Red Sparrow.
Was it a pleasure?
It actually was. I mean, it's an okay film. It's a pretty good film, I would say, but sometimes it gets overshadowed by sex that is a metaphor for power. And violence that is a metaphor for sex. Jennifer Lawrence plays basically this girl who gets, blackmailed into becoming a sparrow. And it's not a Black Widow movie. Instead, the sparrows are going to school for sluts.
Oh, dear.
I mean, that's not a big spoiler. But, you know, because they talk about it in the trailer how they're supposed to seduce their targets. So that's pretty much what they do. But Jennifer Lawrence, she's a smart cookie. She's one step ahead of everybody, which is a little annoying, but still good. You know, you can kind of, you know, it still works. But she has to figure out how she's going to survive in this world without, you know, basically how she's going to get over on the people that blackmailed her into service and all this other stuff. And it's an interesting story. I mean, you can kind of figure out what's going to go on. I won't say it's not an action-packed spy thriller, but it's more of a, I mean, some would say, it's still an interesting spy thriller, besides the sex and violence that kind of gets a little bit over the top and grotesque, or gory, I'd rather say, at times when it doesn't need to be. It's just for the sake of being over the top and making it, I guess, stand out from other films. It's also directed by Francis Lawrence, who also directed Jennifer Lawrence in Hunger Games. And you may also know him from directing a bunch of videos in the 90s and
Waiting for Tonight. What's so different? Oh, yeah. I remember Francis Lawrence videos. He used to be really good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I recommend going to see it.
Okay. So. I did not think that was going to be the case. Because the trailer just looked, it just looked derivative. And but yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Come on, Red Sparrow. All right. And Ali and I didn't see any new movies. I spent the whole weekend inside trying to do stuff behind the scenes for the show. But hopefully I'll be able to get out literally and check out some stuff. That was a bad plan.
I tried watching the live action Netflix live action Full Metal Alchemist movie.
I heard it try, so I'm guessing that it was not worth your time.
It's absolutely atrocious. And it's not without that they tried. It's just that because there are certain things like watching anime and watching Western things are you have to sort of you have to switch your brain has to kind of make a mental switch to sort of allow Eastern mannerisms and just ways of, handling situations to be different. But the thing is, when it's live action and they try to distribute that to international audiences, it's a real task because there are some things that go on in the live action in the anime, the animated version, that you just sort of as a Westerner, you're just like, because anime, right? Because
it's animated, you know, and it's, you know, right. More.
But then when you try to translate that like beat for beat into a live action thing, it's it's really bad.
It's Full Metal Alchemist is the one about the two kids who go into the wormhole, and they one gets attacked to the point where the other one has to put him inside of like the suit of armor to keep him alive. Is that correct?
It's
or do I have it mixed up something else?
You have some of it put together. It's basically this world is there's alchemy is a real thing in this world, and the two boys, their mother dies, and in an effort to try to bring her back, they try to do forbidden alchemy, which is human transmutation. They get all the ingredients to create a human being, but the reason why no one it's forbidden is because when you try to do something like that, there's one thing that people tend to not account for, and that is the soul. You cannot recreate a soul.
Right. So you and make
so
a zombie.
What happens is. Yeah, so what happens is you make a grotesque monstrosity that will in the process eventually pull from the actual person doing the alchemic reaction because it's trying to get the other ingredient, the thing that makes a human being a human being. In the process, it takes one of the boys' arm and leg, and the other boy, it takes his entire body. And the only thing that the one boy left can do is attach his essence to a suit of armor that's also in the room.
Okay, so...
And so now it's basically a journey for the two boys to basically get their bodies back, basically.
Right. Let me ask you this about the live action remake.
Mm-hmm.
Are the two boys present in the remake?
If the two boys are present.
Are they played by kids?
Oh yeah, so at first it's played by kids, but there's a time jump just like in the anime.
All right, are they played by people of Asian descent?
Yes, they are played by Asian people. Everybody in the movie is of Asian descent.
Is the movie in Japanese?
Yes, with subtitles.
So this is not. So we are having to worry about whitewashing. It doesn't work as live action.
It just doesn't work as a live action. Also, the funny thing about you talking about whitewashing is that they're in the anime itself. This is one of those animes where they literally talk about race being a thing in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird because there are people in the show who are in the anime who are clearly not of Japanese descent, but they're played by Japanese.
They're probably overcorrecting from, Ghost in the Shell and Dragon Ball and stuff.
I don't know, but they're literally pointed out like it's a thing, you know, that is discussed, but, you know, whatever. The point is it doesn't work as a live action, unfortunately, so.
Right. Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead on to film news so we can talk about Black Panther. So, Black Panther is in its second week. Second week of release, and it has already made over $400 million just America.
Just take a moment to just bathe in it. Just
let me because the other part around the world, it has made $700 million. It has been in release for 10 days.
That is just, I love it. So, do you think there's a chance that it might?
Go ahead.
Cross the $1 billion mark.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to cross a billion. It's going to get there.
Oh, really? You think so?
Absolutely. Now, I want to be clear. It's made more money in 10 days than Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Spider-Man 2, Deadpool, Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man Homecoming, Guardians of the Galaxy 1, BVS, Suicide Squad, Iron Man, Thor, Ragnarok, Iron Man 2, Man of Steel, Amazing Spider-Man with... What's his face? The hair. What's that boy's name? What's the boy's name?
Garfield.
Yeah, Andrew Garfield. Thank you. Incredibles.
But listen, no one sees a cockatoo when you say his name.
Listen, that's where I know him from. So it's outgrossed Justice League, of course. It's outgrossed Man of Steel, BVS, Suicide Squad. It's going to probably catch up to Wonder Woman, I'm sure. And it's outgrossed all the X-Men pictures. All of them.
Wow.
Including Deadpool.
Just insane.
10 days.
Just in 10 days. That is beautiful. I have a question now. So a lot of times on the show, we have discussed that the pay that actors and actresses get. And I wanted to ask, can you, at the advent of breaking records and whatnot, can you go back and ask more
absolutely
to negotiate your pay?
Absolutely the fuck not. However, I am sure everyone in the movie has a bonus clause in their contract. If the movie goes over X amount of dollars, they get extra money.
So that's what I was going to ask.
And Chadwick probably has maybe like a 0.5% of the box office something coming his way. I'm imagining, at least. That's what I would do if I was Chadwick. But yeah, it's broken so many box office records. It's the biggest February opening weekend. Which I beat out Deadpool. It's the biggest non-sequel opening weekend for any of these superhero movies. The biggest superhero launch of all time. The biggest Friday to Sunday opening weekend for a long holiday debut. The biggest long holiday opening weekend. Biggest opening weekend for ever for any movie not directed by a white guy. The biggest grossing movie directed by a black filmmaker in 10 days. Because it beat out the previous winner, which was F. Gary Gray, who directed Fast and the Furious Part 8.
God, this is just...
The biggest pre-summer opening weekend. Biggest Monday gross of all time. Second biggest comic book superhero opening weekend behind the Avengers. Second biggest Sunday gross. Second biggest four-day gross. Third biggest non-summer opening weekend. Fourth biggest Saturday gross. Fifth biggest opening weekend of all time. Unadjusted for inflation. It is only behind The Avengers, Jurassic World, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and Star Wars The Force Awakens. So it's made more money than Avatar.
Oh, wow.
So it's already biggest.
I have a question about that. Is the margin big or is it tiny?
Well, between it and Avatar?
Is it just like when you say all these records? Is it just that it just barely passes them?
Some of them is barely. Some of them is a little bit more. It all depends. It's not important. What's important is that it get there.
Okay, fair.
Wait, no, I think the list. All right, let me double check. No, it's still number. It's not. It's made more money than Avatar. It's number 29 on the list of domestic grosses of all time. Unadjusted for inflation. So it's behind Frozen, Transformers, Jurassic Park, a bunch of other stuff. So it still has a ways to go though there. But I think of opening weekends, it's the top five opening weekend of all time. Yeah, it's top five opening weekend, not top five grossing of all time. It's still, I mean, shit, Finding Dory is up there and Beauty and the Beast and shit. But I'm sure, given that it made so much money this quickly, like by next weekend, it should jump into like maybe the top 20 or the top 10 of all time domestic box office grosses. The winner is actually not Avatar anymore. The winner is Star Wars Force Awakens. It made $936 million in just America alone. It's the highest grossing movie of all time. Droid, please. Okay. So... we already talked about Lupita Nyong'o going on to play Trevor Noah's mom in the adaptation of his autobiography, Born a Crime. But yeah, so A Wrinkle in Time comes out in 2 weeks, and we're going to all do this again because we want to support Black women too.
Yep. Please, guys, don't just be like, okay, I'm done. Like, no. Please support
Like Duvernay. Yeah, because the funny thing about Wrinkle in Time is that, you know, it's one of those classic books. Like, we didn't read it in our school, but I think Ken said he read it in his. But yeah, like, it's one of those classic children's books and that, you know, Ava took it.
Yeah, I have never heard of that book until it was announced that Ava DuVernay was going to direct.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Film adapted to it. Like, why is it a classic children's book, Brandon? Can you shed some light on that?
I mean, it's one of those ones, you know, that you read in the school time, it won awards and stuff, and it came out in 1963. And it sort of kind of been like a classical children's literature.
Can you compare it to another classical children's book?
101 Dalmatians. They're about the same age, I think. Me, Mary
Poppins. So, what did you read in middle school that was sci-fi based?
We didn't read a lot of sci-fi. So everything we read in middle school was like dramas and stuff, like Where the Red Fern Grows and shit like that.
Because I remember I don't know. Maybe it's because I was in South Carolina. We were lucky enough to read some stuff that was experimental, more sci-fi. I think I also read The Martian Chronicles, and I don't know if that was high school or middle school. Mm.
And Miss Frisbee and the Rats and Them, we read that shit.
I never read that.
It's a really good book. I don't mean to call it shit. It's a really good book.
Caribbean literature is not full of sci-fi.
Ooh, it's full of pain.
It's full of message
and racism
and racism.
Yeah. So AMC theaters are partnering with a nonprofit called, let me get the name of it, as my phone decides it wants to be slow today, Color of Change. And they are they're paying for underprivileged children to see A Wrinkle in Time across the nation. They're going to have free screenings start at local AMCs starting on March the 9th. And so they're looking for donations right now to help finance it. And then Color Change will put tickets in the hands of children in need through a network of local partners, schools, and community-based organizations.
Well, look at that.
And then not only that, Ava herself, she's just started an initiative in, this news just came out. Like, I just saw this on the Facebook. I actually saw it on Rod from Black Hollywood Tips. I saw it on his page. Shout out to him. She's starting an initiative to help filmmakers of color and help, you know, diversify movies that are made out in L.A. You know, that's actually, she's part of, like, an organization that's already been doing that as well. But this is something that she's partnering with to get more money behind it. It is called the Evolve Entertainment Fund. And it'll be collaborating with companies like DreamWorks and Creative Artists Agency to make 150 internships for aspiring artists. Which is always good because it's like, you know, when you try to break into Hollywood, you have to know people who know people, basically, if you want to get an internship. But, you know, there's like, this is about opening more doors for people, especially people of color and women, to be able to build up that experience that you need so that you can do projects, you know, and get like these budgets and things so they don't always go to white people who want to, as Ralph Angel so eloquently put it, just stare into space for 90 minutes. That was always the perfect like description of like the indie film aesthetic in some ways.
That's messed up, but yeah.
Next
up, I see what they mean.
Yeah. Brendan Fraser, who apparently, what's the name of the, he's on a show right now. I forgot what the name of the doggone show is. He's literally shooting a show right now. But yeah, he's been away from the spotlight for a very long time. And GQ did like a really good write-up on him. Like about like what he had sort of had to go through in his career and why he sort of went away, which I really didn't know. Basically, what happens is that, you know, he was in a whole lot of action pictures, action comedies mostly, like, you know, like George of the Jungle and the Mummy and things like that, and all the Mummy sequels. Basically, they had him doing enough of his own stunts to where he was getting, like, you know, broken bones and things, and things went out of alignment. And so by the time he did the Mummy Part 3, he literally said he was basically held together by tape and glue. So he stopped acting as frequently because he just simply couldn't take it anymore.
Wow.
Because the thing is that if you think about Brendan Fraser, like a lot of his movies, he had to be in perfect shape anyway. And like, I'm guessing it was hard like to find like stunt doubles, or they wanted him to do some of his own stunts. Like he literally talks about being in a whole lot of pain and having to sort of kind of get by on painkillers. But yeah, like, oh, he's on a show called Trust, which is a series version of the same story from All the Money in the World about the kidnapping of John Paul Getty III. They're making it over in London. No, Siri, didn't say anything about you. But also, he talks at length about, you know, sort of his life between and after that. Before I get to the part that's making like the biggest reveal of the article, he mentions, am I the only person on the show who has seen Looney Tunes back in action?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie. in that movie, the movie's about Brendan Fraser, who plays a stuntman for Brendan Fraser, and Daffy Duck, who, you know, he's Daffy Duck, who want to go on an adventure because their Hollywood careers aren't working for them, basically. You know, it's a Looney Tunes movie. It's not that good. There are parts of it that are good. Overall, it's just ridiculous. And Steve Martin's terrible in it because he's playing a cartoon character as a live action person. But there's a scene at the end of the movie where, because as the stuntman, Brendan Fraser been complaining about real Brendan Fraser, like for a good part of the movie. At the end, he sees actor star Brendan Fraser, and the way he's done up in like a robe with sunglasses on, he's kissing his awards and shit, and so he walks up to himself and punches himself in the face. It's supposed to be one of those, you know, cute, funny, fourth wall breaking jokes, basically, with the help of a couple of green screens and a little bit of CGI. But in this article, he mentions about how much he enjoyed shooting that because he hated the image of being a Hollywood star. Like, shooting that scene was cathartic for him because he felt like he was actually punching the entity that he had to create to become a star in the face, and sort of kind of getting back at himself that way. And I felt, I didn't realize I would ever read anything that poignant about that silly little movie. But the biggest part of his thing, the part that, because I read the GQ piece before the articles about what he said in it started getting, you know, coming up, you know, they read the article and take out the part that's the biggest story. In 2003, Brendan Fraser was sexually assaulted by the former president of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, who are the people who put on the Golden Globes. His name was Philip Burke, and apparently he reached out, you know, Brendan Fraser says, you know, he's walking down the hallway in a hotel and a dude grabbed him by the behind and touched up in places that he shouldn't have touched up while grabbing him from behind. He says that he demanded an apology and he sort of got one of those, I apologize for if you were offended apologies, which doesn't, you know, no, that never satisfies anybody. But he mentions how, you know, it made him feel, he says, I felt like I was a little kid. I felt like there was like a ball in my throat. I thought I was going to cry. But, you know, it was one of those things, like, you know, like the whole like era of Me Too thing is, you know, people have continued to get into trouble about this stuff. You know, there's been all kinds of stories coming out. You know, the stories about Fred Savage and Jason Hervey on the set of the one that was harassing one of the women who worked either wardrobe or makeup. I forgot which one. And apparently that was why they canceled. The one reason why they canceled the show. There were stories about Scott Baio, you know, having underage sex with the girl who played his little sister on Charles in Charge. You know. And so, like, you know, stories about men being harassed have been few and far between, but, you know, it's still a thing that goes on. Not as much as women getting harassed, but it's still a thing that happens. And it's, you know, by the man who basically ran the Golden Globes at the time, you know, because, you know, of course, they say that the whole thing was that his version of events was fabricated and everything like that. But, you know, I mean, Brendan Fraser ain't got shit to lose at this point.
Pretty much, so.
So, yeah, I mean, that guy, he doesn't work there anymore, so I don't know what's going to happen with him and like that, but I'm glad at least he got, it feels like in his, you know, revealing, like a lot of people who said something about stuff like Uma Thurman and, you know, Rose McGowan and everybody, talking about it helps because people realize that it's not just them, they aren't alone, and that, you know, if you speak out against it, you can stop it from happening to somebody else, which is the most important thing of all. And next up, so DC news. While DC has officially been kind of quiet lately, all sorts of stories have been coming out about them working and the stuff they're working on. You know, there's rumors that Michael Bay might direct the Lobo movie. People have been up in arms about that. I'm like, it's Michael Bay and it's Lobo. Elmo shrug. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But I know, I think people, I guess, want like a deep introspective version of Lobo for some fucking reason, I guess. They got new directors on Flashpoint, the guys who did Spider-Man Homecoming, which,
They backtracked.
What happened?
They said that they are only, they're still negotiating.
Oh, Jesus.
They aren't.
Why? And then now the one thing that is actually like official that's happened, which isn't good news. Joss Whedon is stepping down from being the writer director of the DC adaptation of Batgirl. He says, "I'm grateful to Geoff Johns and to Tomi Emmerich, who's the president of Warner Brothers Picture Group, and everyone who was so welcoming when I arrived and so understanding when I is there a sexy word for failed?" He basically said he took a month to realize he didn't have a story for Batgirl, even though he came to them like, "I want to make the Batgirl movie." So I want to know what the pitch was. If he didn't have a fucking story, what did he come there and say? "Hi, I'm Joss Whedon. I made Buffy. I made the Avengers. I want to make Batgirl. You're hired." Is that what happened? The fuck. I legit don't get it. Because like the reason why we sort of kind of were like, okay, when Justice League came out, some people were like, "That's all right, Joss, baby. That's all right. Like, you like the little kid who can't hit the notes in church." We were like, "Well, he's going to make Batgirl, you know." But then, of course, the whole stuff about him cheating on his wife came out and all that kind of stuff about he's like a fake feminist and everything. And so people were like, maybe he shouldn't make Batgirl because, you know, he's sort of kind of, you know, he's problematic and shit. So
he's
now
kind of a jerk.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the rumor, of course, is that he may not have quit so much as he got fired. Because especially after, you know, Patty Jenkins, you know, made Wonder Woman to a hit. And certainly after Black Panther, I think Hollywood has realized, hey, we don't have to hand everything to a fucking white guy.
Yeah. And especially after he failed to deliver what they wanted with Justice League.
Well, no, Jesus Christ is probably the only director who could have delivered what they wanted for Justice League.
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the fans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, oh. Let me tell you, so I'm in the Reddit group about the DC movies, and the thread about Joss Whedon leaving Batgirl is like probably 500 replies long by that. It's like a whole lot of thank God, Jesus Christ, holy, praise hands. They are so happy because, you know, there are people who want the Snyder Cut and shit. They think that Joss Whedon sabotaged Justice League and everything, all kinds of and so forth. So they're super happy. I'm super worried. Although, does this give an opportunity for a woman to step up and direct Batgirl? I know Roxane Gay has said that she wants to write Batgirl. And I know a lot of people said, like, they're worried because, you know, when she wrote World of Wakanda, people didn't really like that.
Me.
Like Ken. Let's see. I don't know. Like, there was an article. I'm going to look it up. I mean, obviously, I feel like Batgirl, if you're going to have a director for, if you're going to make Batgirl before you make Batman. Well, I assume that Batgirl is going to be made after they finally make Matt Reeves as the Batman. I assume that's the case. Otherwise, it's kind of silly. So people have been naming people they want to make the Batgirl movie. They said, somebody said Dee Reese. I can see that. They said Reed Morano. They said Ava. I don't know if Ava would do Batgirl.
That's not in her wheelhouse.
It's not her wheelhouse. She wants to do Big Barda.
Mm-hmm.
Which I could totally give Ava a Jack Kirby's Fourth World movie. Do
the
that
Forever
shit.
People. she could do the Forever People, but I doubt she go over to the DCU Disney in her pocket.
Right. Michelle McLaurin was supposed to direct Wonder Woman. Maybe they could bring her back. Mm. Catherine Bigelow.
Mm. Male gigolo.
You know how I feel about Catherine Bigelow after seeing Detroit. Karen Kusama, who did Jennifer's Body and Flux, Girl Fight, The Invitation, and Halt and Catch Fire. Possibly. Leslie Glatter, who did who worked on Mad Men and Homeland, two TV shows.
Okay.
Greta Gerwig. That's the person top of everybody's list because she did Lady Bird. I can see that. But they didn't get Gina Price Bythewood considering that they indefinitely suspended production on Silver and Black for Sony.
Ooh, stop it. my pick was Brenda Chapman.
Oh, that's an interesting pick. Why? Why Brenda?
Didn't she do Brave?
Yeah, but she's never worked outside of animation before, which I she can make the jump, but like she was the first person to come to my mind because, but at the same time, her husband did the jump. Kevin Lima went from doing a goofy movie in Tarzan to doing Enchanted, which is technically a live action movie. So it's definitely possible. It's just, I was like, I guess because the whole like Brave is be similar to Batgirl as far as like the tone. I'm asking because I've never seen Brave people because you know she didn't finish Brave. They finished it for her, the white man and Hansy. What's his name? John Lasseter.
Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, but like, if she wants to, I feel like because I read that both her and Kevin Lima are working together in their own stuff. But I mean. Anybody at this, like, listen, show, as long as you show with a story, unlike Joss Whedon, you have a shot at it.
Let's quit perpetrating the idea he didn't have an idea.
I feel like he had an idea, but they wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah, me, that's what I'm thinking. I think he was just, they want a clean house and they need some scapegoats.
Yeah. First John Berg and then him. You know what this means, though, that the fans think they're going to get a Snyder cut in like 2 weeks or something like that. You know that, right? Make them stop. All right, let's go ahead to TV reviews. All right, so I didn't get to see Black Lightning last week, so I saw it this week.
Did they show an episode this week?
Episode this week. So I saw the one from the week before. The one where he's having headaches the whole time through.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw that episode
too. And like Antonio Fargas plays Tobias Wells' dad. I was like, Antonio Fargas.
That's not Antonio Fargas.
That's what it said. Who did he play then? I swear to God, that was his name. And he was playing.
It was Kyle from Living Single.
Then who did Antonio Fargas play?
I don't know.
I knew that guy was familiar.
We are so TK Carson.
Yeah.
Hmm. Ain't a lot of makeup.
with his Forrest Whitaker eyes.
But yeah, like, it was a good episode. I don't know how I feel about Anissa's Mark I Thunder costume. She looks like Captain Marvel Jr.
People online were saying it kind of looks like the costume where you know, the misogynistic looking costume that she has.
Yeah, it was her first costume in the comics. That's what it's based on.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then they had a gay guy help her pick it out. Mm-hmm.
You're going to be the most fabulous superhero on the line. Go ahead. Good luck, honey.
That's what they're good for. Yeah.
Like, because I want my secret identity to be withheld. I'm going to go to a store and pick out my outfit, have somebody help me with it, and show him and let him see my name on my credit card. Okay.
Ooh, bitch, guess what?
Guess who came through?
I cringed at that entire scene. I was like, wow, okay.
I mean, did we really it seemed weird watching Anissa go through a fashion montage.
It did. TC Cars, not TK, my bad. Antonio Fargas played a character named David Poe. I don't know who that was, but yeah. It was definitely him. Kyle from Living Single. But yeah, like, and so I enjoyed that. What I really enjoyed though was Legends of Tomorrow. So Legends of Tomorrow came back. They've had they were on the air these last 2 weeks while most of the other shows were off. Like The Flash, I think, comes back next week. Riverdale doesn't come out till fucking March. They've been off all February. But so Legends, their first week back, they had John Constantine as the guest star. The same dude who played him on the TV show came back from because he was on the Arrow too.
Yeah. I heard he was flirting with a snark.
Not really. Like, if it was, it went past. It was more so that he was flirting with Sarah. Because, I mean, slight spoiler alert, they fuck in the episode.
Well, it was something about in the intro when he tells whatchamacallit he's taken. Oh. When Constantine meets him and he looks him up and down.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
I'm taken. So, Wentworth Miller... That's his last time playing his snart, and I swear to God, he was just like, I think he did his jumping jacks and his push-ups and watched RuPaul's Drag Race on repeat in his trailer before he went on the set, because he gave the whole shit up, boy. in the best way possible. I mean, he came out there. He's like, yes, we're going to do this mission.
Okay, so for the people who don't watch Legends of Tomorrow, could you please like unravel that, unpack that for us?
So you remember this, the special, right? Crisis yes. on Earth X. How he's yes. Leo Snart from Earth X. He's engaged to the Ray. Right. He decided to stay behind and with the Legends for a little while before he went back home. So this is the episode where he's just been hanging out for two episodes on the Wavewater. So in this episode is about they have discovered a girl who's possessed by the demon. I forgot the demon's name, who's like the big bad for the season. And it okay. basically it turns into a sort of kind of like, not a parody, but like a version of The Exorcist. Because they're trying okay. to exorcise the demon out of this girl. And it's not working, basically.
Okay, so Leonard Snark.
So Leonard Snark is basically just part of the team here. It's him.
Okay, but you said he was putting it all out there.
Oh yeah. Basically, the way he performed. You know how he always plays Snark, regular Snark? Imagine yes. that doubled. Imagine that force doubled.
Okay.
He did a lot. It was great, though. And then at the end, he said his goodbyes. He's like, he's going to go home and marry Ray. And he gave Heatwave a hug on his way out. Heatwave is trying to watch the game at the same time. He's like, you know, he's still watching the game, right? It's funny because Legends has perfected this sort of kind of like, they know that their show is wacky and they're fine with it, but they can still like, they make it work. It was especially good in the episode they aired this week called Here I Go Again, which is named after the Mamma Mia song because this represents the thing. So Zari, a.k.a. Isis, she has hacked into Gideon because she's trying to run a simulation to try to figure out if she can find a hack or a time anomaly that she can save her brother because her brother's mm-hmm. In 2042. But when she does this, the Arrested Legends catch her. They're on a mission coming back from the 70s, so they're all dressed in disco outfits, just arbitrarily. And so Sarah bitches her out, so she has to go and try to fix the wave rider because she crashed it with her simulation. And all of a sudden, it blows up, and she's back arguing with Sarah. She realizes after a while she's stuck in a time loop. So she lives the same hour dozens of times.
Oh my God, they Groundhog Day.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that they mentioned Groundhog Day in the thing because Nathaniel's like, oh, Groundhog Day. Listen, you're going to be stuck in the loop for a while. So just find me first and just say Groundhog Day and I'll get it. So she's like, Hedgehog Day. She's from the future. She don't know this
God
shit.
Damn it.
And he's like, Hedgehog Day? You mean Groundhog Day? Yeah. Oh, so you're in a time loop. And so the fun thing is that her being in this time loop, like she goes through it at least 100 times. Because it is where everybody, the ship blows up, everybody dying. She goes back to the like, hour beforehand. But she, in that, every time she goes through it, she finds out something new about the rest of the team. Like she finds out that that Nathaniel and Amaya, they still have feelings for each other. And they're trying to hide from the rest of the team to the point where they're trying to flashy thing each other to try to make sure that they don't react in public. Mick has a secret project he's working on. I won't spoil it for you. You have to watch the episode. That shit is fucking funny. Like a secret thing he does in his room. Ray has something that he's hiding from Sarah. Sarah Lance relax because, you know, she, you know, the lady who runs the time bureau that they were fighting the first part of the season last year?
Yeah.
So they're friends now. Mm-hmm. And so she's always calling on Skype just randomly to talk. And it's like, everybody's like, you know, she wants you, right? And so, but Sarah's like, you know, she's trying to keep her at bay or whatever. We see her she goes to the time jump ship just to hang out and talk to the girl on the phone. Just be like, oh, I don't know, girl. These people, they're so, I'm so happy, so hard on them, but I don't want to be. I just want everybody to be better and everything. We can see her relax a little bit. And it's just a really great episode that sort of kind of digs not just into the personality of Zari herself, but the rest of the Legends. So it's basically a bottle episode because they're on the ship the whole episode. They don't leave the ship. So it's clearly one like they wrote to keep the budget down, but they did it in such a good way. And it's so funny because Zari goes through the loop so many times that at some point she starts finishing everybody's sentences. She learns to play the violin.
What?
A couple of the times, she just has fun when she goes and puts on everybody's costume, including Hot Girl's old helmet, which she finds on the Wave Rider. And then the funniest part is that she runs to Nick, to Ray and Mick having an argument, and she's in the background of their shot with cue cards. as they're saying what they're saying.
What the
It is so good. And I won't spoil the rest of it. You have to watch it. It is funny. A perfect episode of TV. And then the tag at the end, which isn't related to the episode at all. So I posted that in our group. This is a nice podcast group on Facebook. Please join us. Wally. Rip Hunter finds Wally West in China. With a yes, mm-hmm. he has a man bun in China. and he's gonna join the Legends.
You like that, don't you?
What?
We talk about this, Ollie. He's joining Legends of Tomorrow. He's off the Flash now.
Yes, I know this, but I'm just like, they don't know what to do with that character. They don't know what to do with that character. He's...
Well, they have a open slot for a Negro on Legends now that not just Jefferson Jackson's gone, but Whitworth Miller is gone too. He counts. So
wow,
he does. So they need a black man on there, and so they got Wally. That's all.
Wally
West, Keenan Lonsdale. And I'm sorry, Ali, I seen the picture from the next episode this week. His hair is all over the place next episode.
Okay. Yifonda should allow him to embrace his Moving on.
What have y'all been watching?
Probably that same stuff. I also went back and started watching The Blacklist on a friend's suggestion. Hmm. On Netflix. I got through the first season. It's pretty good, especially first few episodes. But my thing about The Blacklist coming onto it is a lot of it's like they're trying to do the whole police procedural thing. Well, for those of you who don't know, Blacklist is basically about a enemy of the state who makes a deal with the CIA for him to help them track down other people who are worse than he is, other criminals. Who are international criminals, whatever. He's going to help them do it, but they're all connected in some kind of way. And there's also a mysterious plot because the only person he'll talk to in the CIA is a certain agent and their special connection and all that. But anyway, James Spader's character, Red, he just becomes one of those characters who's like knows everything and is so smart. And you can only have a character like that for so long. Like when somebody's always ahead of the game and like seems like they're too smart for things, like 22 episodes in one season, they just become annoying. Mm. But it has some great characters, great character development, some interesting ideas. A lot of their quote unquote, it's like the idea of the threat of the week, the monster of the week, the villain of the week, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. They have some Batman ass villains on that show, which are really cool. It's like, but I could all see them like being a Batman villain, except they have a better name because all the generic names are taken. Like, you know, you can't call somebody just the Penguin, or, you know, you call them the craft maker or some crap like that.
Right.
So it, but I mean, the first season's not bad.
Okay. Ali, anything from you?
I haven't watched anything of note, I would say. I've basically been sort of not off and on binging a couple episodes each time because one of my friends got me into this watching this anime that it's called Food Wars, the English name, and it's basically all about cooking. And I think it's one of the greatest things I ever watched on TV because there's a genre of anime called shonen where it's pretty much all, it's for young boys.
Right.
Right. And it's usually targeting things like, if it's robots or fighting, martial arts or, you know, that sort of thing. And this particular, anime Food Wars, it is a shonen, but instead of fighting physically, it's you're getting into very intense cooking contests.
Oh, Lord.
The main character is an aspiring young chef, and he He has just gotten into one of the most elite culinary high schools in Japan. And everybody there is like top notch, or at least there are a few students there that's like top notch. And basically it's the show is centered on his journey to get through all of his classes and all the different contests and whatnot to progress through the school, because essentially his goal is to be a better chef, or to beat his father at a cooking comp, at cooking. His father is like a world traveling kind of chef. So, okay. But yeah, I absolutely love it. It is, I thought I would be bored, but the show is really well crafted, and the cooking that they do on the show, the gastronomy, is actually like true to life. It's like literally down to the last detail, and the animation and just the drawing is so quality. Like you just want to reach through the screen and eat the food that they're presenting.
Okay.
So yeah.
Cool. And then just to close before we go to TV news, I did rewatch the Our Gang or Little Rascals short, Teacher's Bow, from 1935. The reason being, there was an article that came out that these two kids wanted to go see Black Panther, but they want to pay for two tickets. So one kid got on the other's shoulders and they went and found a big trench coat and they went into the theater to try to buy one ticket as an adult. So there's a there's an episode of The Little Rascals, of course, that actually happens. So they remade it for the movie. So I went back and watched that episode and just laughed. I was like, wow, you never think this should happen in real life, but it did. The person in the movie, they had Mel Brooks as the poor person that had to sit around and try to see these damn kids sitting on each other's heads in trench coats trying to act like grown people. Heard enough. What happened, Ken?
Those kids knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I don't think they didn't expect to actually get in. I think they were just doing that to get the attention.
Right.
Yeah, no one's stupid enough to get to be fooled by that.
You know, no, look who our president is. Oh, let's move forward. TV news.
Oh, wow. Ran it with the cheap shots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. First up, Lawrence Fishburne is going to produce an adaptation of Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur as an animated TV show for one of the Disney channels. For those who don't read the book, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur is a updated adaptation of Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur. Basically, it's about a super genius 9-year-old black girl named Lunella who has a gigantic pet dinosaur.
Okay.
She's also an inhuman and scared of what her powers might be. And she's like the second smartest or something like that person in the Marvel universe. She's basically the prototype for Shuri in Black Panther, you might as well say.
Right.
She's like one of the smartest people in the Marvel universe, and she's only like 10.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's perfect concept for an animated show. They said they're going to do it. That's all the story, but that's pretty freaking awesome. Less impressive, at least I thought so. Netflix put out a teaser trailer for their updated remake of Lost in Space, the classic family sci-fi drama about a family, the Robinsons, who get stuck on a runaway spaceship and go from planet to planet each week. Their new version comes to Netflix April the 13th. I mean, teaser trailer is basically just shots of the family getting on the spaceship, basically going haywire, and the famous Danger Will Robinson line, basically. Not a lot to go off of. I'm glad they made the doctor, I forgot the doctor's name on the show. They cast it with Parker Posey, a woman, so it's slightly less creepy, because they had like a creepy looking dude who always hung out with the little boy, and you know, it's problematic now. But yeah, Lost in Space was actually a good classic show. Like, it used to be on Netflix. It isn't anymore. At least I don't think so. Might still be up there somewhere. Oh, no, it was on Hulu. It might still definitely be on Hulu. It's a Fox show. That and The Time Tunnel. So will it live up to the original? We'll see. All right, let's go to music. I will tell you what I've been listening the fuck to is the Black Panther score. Not the, I mean, listen to the Kendrick album too, but the score.
Mm-hmm.
By, what's his name?
Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah. That shit is
Isn't
flames.
It awesome?
That shit I love it. Is fucking flames.
It is. I usually don't listen to scores and I like them.
The music from the Ancestral Plane is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The music when Killmonger wins, and then the Killmonger putting his plan in the ashes to give everybody the weapons. Where it's like the sort of kind of one of the themes from before remixed a little bit, and they put like a little trap beat over it because it's Killmonger.
Yeah, I love it because it's like that's the part of the movie where the camera is upside down.
Yeah.
As he walks into the throne room. And I freaking love it because it's such a great way to show, like, visually and then through the music, just how the tone of the movie has changed.
Mm-hmm. I'm the king. And I'm going to pretend like I want to liberate black people. I just want to give everybody weapons and kill everybody. Mm. Nakia was right, y'all. Not Killmonger. What y'all been listening to?
That's pretty much what's been on my plate as well.
Okay. Yeah.
There's something about that soundtrack. It's just, maybe I'm just really in the hype still.
Oh no, that shit is good. Listen, they need to, I mean, obviously they're going to probably push a bunch of shit for awards come November, December, but they need to make sure they secure Ludwig a fucking nomination for that score. That shit is awesome. There are very few scores in these Marvel movies that are that evocative and that,
and I feel like as if I would remember that score too. Like,
yeah.
I don't see me forgetting this soon.
Not anytime soon at all. All right, Kim, what about you?
I haven't really been listening to much else, but on top of that, you know that he actually scored the 4-hour version of Black Panther?
Oh, tell me more.
Yeah. Oh. So when they released the 4-hour version in theaters, not if, but when.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know. After, I feel like as if since Brandon has just brought up in the top of the news show that it's made that much money, I don't see why they shouldn't put the 4-hour version.
It takes is a little bit of time and money. Put an intermission in halfway through when Killmonger wins. Let us go to the bathroom and refill our snacks and shit.
Oh, do you remember when you used to go to intermission in movies?
Yeah.
I don't.
Really?
It was like a Disney movie that had like a long short before it, like that. I guess people, I don't know, they put one in that Olaf shit that ran with Coco. But when I saw The Prince and the Pauper and Rescuers Down Under, there was an intermission in that one. But you know, intermissions for movies.
Rescuers Down Under was in the theaters. I thought that was straight to TV.
No, it was in the theaters.
Okay,
it was in the theaters. That was their first movie. They introduced computer coloring and stuff. Like, but yeah, like movies like Gone with the Wind have an intermission. West Side Story. Fucking what's the shit with the lady, My Fair Lady? Those movies, you know, they Sound of Music, they start the movie, they give you 15 minutes to go and, you know, pay water bills and stuff, you know, and get more snacks and stretch because the movie's 4 fucking hours long. Just put an intermission in, we good. I really want to see as much. Listen, it worked for Superman the movie. It'll work for Black Panther. I'm telling you.
Right, and I'm telling.
I'm rubbing off. Yeah, let's go ahead to music news. Speaking of new music.
Wax on. Wax off.
So, speaking of new shit, Janelle
Monáe.
Please
don't take that any kind of way.
Janelle Monáe is back. She's a new record coming out called Dirty Computer, which Ken had said like last time we recorded that basically it's supposed to be like her Lemonade, where it's going to be like a feature length video, visual, you know, any motion picture, she calls it. But from this project, she has dropped 2 new videos simultaneously on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, well, they probably came out simultaneously, but the first one I watched was Make Me Feel, which is sort of kind of her giving you a little bit of like Prince.
Something real.
Like, yeah, it says it samples Kiss, which I thought it just sounded like a man. I guess, you know, she had to pay the money. So she don't get that Robin Thicke problem. But it sounds really, really good. Like, y'all know Janelle Monáe typically tends to save me from, like, sort of kind of like the monotony of how modern, like, music can be sometimes. But, like, you know, I love when she puts out new music. So that shit was awesome. She's in the video fucking macking on Tessa Thompson. And then trying to decide between Tessa Thompson and the dude that she's looking at. And then the other one is Django Jane, which is just her fucking rapping like 900. Like, remember Cannabis did 100 bars? Remember that shit from the 90s, Ken?
Yeah.
This is Chanel doing the same shit, but way better. Like, I was like, golly. She killed that shit. Listen, that album's going to be flames. It comes out April the 27th, so that's all I'll be ready for it. And the cover. Oh, this is the cover. Come on, cover. I can't wait for that shit. And speaking of people coming back, so Ava DuVernay very nervously asked Sade to, if she might possibly contribute a song to A Wrinkle in Time. And to her shock and to her delight and the delight of everybody else, Sade said yes. So the first new Sade song in God knows how long, which is called Flower of the Universe, is going to be on the soundtrack for A Wrinkle in Time.
That's good, because A Wrinkle in Time needed that that boost, a little bit of news boost.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but why I don't understand why they're releasing A Wrinkle in Time this close to Black Panther.
I think A Wrinkle in Time was always supposed to come out this time, and Black Panther was supposed to come out when Spider-Man Homecoming came out.
I would have pushed one of them forward or back or sideways or something. Because, I mean, I know they probably couldn't strongly anticipate the demand for Black Panther. Having two big name Black directors release films within 3 weeks of each other, that just doesn't seem like a good idea to me, because you're going to be trying to rouse the same user base for two different movies at the same time, and maybe exhausting them.
Possibly. So, I hope
plus not. That your promotions are probably overshadowing each one another or something. Oh, absolutely. Like that.
They're going to have to put together like joint trailers.
Right. I mean, because you're not here. It's like Black Panther is dominating the news cycle, but nobody has thought to insert something about A Wrinkle in Time in there, or Ava DuVernay, or making some type of link in there to kind of sell the next movie.
Well, it's like how early did you get to your screening? Because I missed it, but Ali says that there's a trailer for A Wrinkle in Time with Ava introducing it before Black Panther is the attached trailer.
Yeah, that's before the picture starts.
And the fact that they have her introducing it, I think, is important. Like, so you see her face, you know, hey, it's Ava, you know. Mm-hmm. They need to do more of that, I guess, you know. They really have to put, like, Ryan in one of these commercials. Like, yo, what's up? Look, my girl Ava, she got a movie coming out. It's called A Wrinkle in Time, coming out March 9th, y'all. You know. Stop. Don't hassle me with your size, Charlie Brown. You get yourself a cold drink and calm down over there. Lord Jesus. Mrs. Kugel needs to come in this podcast and just draw a line on the ground and dare you to cross it. All right. Now it's time for the Say Something Nice challenge. And so first we have a follow-up. Quincy Jones has apologized for all that shit he said a couple of weeks ago in them interviews. Apparently, Kidada and Rashida got a hold of him and they were like, Daddy, what are you doing? So he has said, in a statement, of course, I am sorry to anyone whom my words offended, and I am especially sorry to my friends who are still here with me and those who aren't. He didn't say any shit was lies, because they weren't lies. He just, you know, apologized for open his mouth really big. The full statement he put on Twitter and probably Instagram too is three paragraphs. I'm not reading it, but I will ask y'all. So, Ken, say something nice to Mr. Quincy Jones on the advent of his trying to backtrack from having said everything about everybody.
Do you know anything about Brazilian music?
Awesome. Ali.
Wow. I guess this is one of those things where just like you accept the apology over some drinks, hoping that he's gonna say something else.
And as for me, Quincy, you shouldn't apologize for telling the truth. You should apologize just for the tone. That's it. I mean, he didn't tell any lies. He's probably just apologizing to Paul McCartney and them for, you know, talking about they weren't shit as musicians, which even John was like, you know, they were studio musicians. So, drugs. The big news from this week, of course, we just did our show about Black Oscar. We talked about Monique a little bit. So Monique has been, of course, you know, continuing going, making the rounds, trying to explain why she wants people to boycott Netflix. And one of her rounds was to The Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous radio program syndicated across the country. Blah, blah, blah. Y'all know DJ Envy, Charlamagne, and poor Angela Yee. So this one, though, wasn't like the typical Breakfast Club interview. So I'm sure Monique watched, did her homework, and realized, you know, how Charlamagne tends to do the guests, especially the guests who happen to be women. And so she was on the offensive the entire time. She called him either, you know, Charlamagne's real name is Leonard McKelvey. He's from South Carolina and shit. She called him either Leonard or Leonard the entire interview. Mm-hmm. And he actually criticized, why you want to call yourself Charlamagne?
why is your name felt Mo apostrophe Neek? I mean.
Well, because people want Mo Neek. Mm. That's why. But
look how we're pronouncing it.
Right. I get what you're saying. But yeah, so the interview, and of course, Sydney was on the phone.
Daddy.
This woman said daddy 25 times, I think, during that interview. And just, listen, I know this used to be an old thing where wives would call the husband daddy, but we are in a new day, and I take issue with umbrage with that. Like, I don't want to call nobody who is not my father daddy, and I don't feel like other people should be doing that as well.
Oh, so you're just going to sit here and just shame her. Okay, I see.
I'm not going to shame. Listen, it just the way she's, I don't know, something like,
This is her pet name for her spouse. They are married and they are allowed to do that.
Okay. You're right. I should be nice. Let me not do that. But essentially, they talked about the whole Netflix thing. Essentially, because they asked multiple times a couple of questions. A, how much, if $5,000 was not enough, how much should have been enough? And even though Sydney didn't give a full number, what he basically said was that they wanted Monique, of course. You know, we talked about, you know, the stipulations, me and Ali on a previous show, about how, you know, she was going to be enjoined for 2 years from doing any other specials or from saying those same jokes on tour. So if you're taking 2 years worth of her career out, you had to compensate her for 2 years worth of work. So she makes $3 to $4 million on the road. So I would assume like $9 million should be how much they're looking for, which we can argue whether that's high or low, but you know, if you want her to do the special, you should make it worth her while. But they also mentioned that there was no negotiation because Netflix, after the first offer, they did not counteroffer, and neither they waited for them to counteroffer. They decided not to. But Charmaine's like, why didn't y'all counteroffer? He asked that multiple times and didn't get an answer. And I think they also asked, well, why don't you just do something else? Why don't you make the special yourself? And I think they were like, still trying to go about the campaign for right now. But yeah, they dodged that one a little bit too. But at least we know what they sort of kind of expected to get and the reason why they turned it down. Well, we know why they turned it down, but a better idea of how much money they were sort of kind of looking for on something like that, instead of just giving us like some, not $5,000, not $500,000, but not $13 million. But it was the end of the interview that got everybody talking, you know, because what funny thing is that in that Breakfast Club, usually, you know, they usually edit their shit down. When you listen to it on the radio, it's cut way down. They put the full 40 or 50 minute version on the internet. With Monique's thing, they actually showed her coming in and leaving the studio. So they attached that to the front and end of the video. And so I'm going to play you as she's coming out of the, as she's leaving the studio, what she says to Charlamagne on her way out the door.
Good morning. Good morning.
But this is her coming in. Like, because I didn't want to show Charlamagne hugging her on her way in.
Sister Angela, you good. It's okay. All about the good.
Sister Angela, you good? You've been holding on. Like I know you close and personal.
And then 1 hour later.
Eddie, thank you so much, my sweet baby, for having us.
Why you keep thanking them? And not me.
You know what, brother? You're going to hear yourself a lot from me lately. You're going to hear yourself around the world because we have to explain brothers like you.
You too.
We watched that movie, Birth of a Nation, and we saw that man walk his wife into that master's house. We watched him walk his wife in. Then we watched him go back and get him. You're that brother. I thank y'all for y'all time, my babies.
Charmaine's mouth fell open, all the way open, when she said that too. So I'm going to ask backwards this time. Ali, say something nice to Charlamagne after Monique basically told him that he ain't shit. He ain't ever going to be shit. He couldn't possibly be shit if he even tried to think about not being shit.
Bro, it's funny. You look the best when you're speechless.
Ken.
Well, you probably get more money for a Netflix special, so hey.
As for me, listen, I don't know how I feel about Monique's approach, Justine, but you know, I know how I feel about Charmaine acting on the radio every goddamn morning. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So therefore, hey. Because it's funny, people are like, you know, I don't watch this show anymore. I don't listen to the show anymore just because I generally just, they annoy the piss out of me. But when I heard about this shit, I saw Monique and Charmaine in the same room. I was like, well, let me watch this shit. And that ending made it all the way worthwhile. But yeah, so that's it. That's our show. Thank you so very much for everybody so much for listening. You can go to ssmpodcast.com and find more. You can find us on all social media under the handle at ssmpodcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else podcasts are found. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or on Stitcher. We are giving away a Black Panther compilation. I believe it's a hardback. I'm sure it's a hardback. It's not a hardback paperback. Basically, it's like 300 pages of Black Panther, and it's awesome. And for our contact information, the phone number to call and everything like that, you can find it all at ssmpodcast.com. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been the Say Something Nice Podcast. I am Brandon.
This is Ali.
And I am the culture that Leonard doesn't know.
We'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye.